We're sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
No exclusive, no premium content, no paywalls. Just a great podcast app for everyone.
Get it for free in the App Store. Oh, we've got a little kitty in the lap.
We got a kitty in the lap.
Oh, sound the alarms. There's a kitty in the lap.
She starts screaming.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hey, Liz.
Whoa, hey, Mackenzie.
What's up?
Nothing much. Just kind of having a chill day. What's
Me
up with
too.
You?
Same. Chill day. I'm like pretty excited for the holidays coming up.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just
vibing.
I'm just doing vibes.
Hell yeah. I'm doing vibes too.
Oh,
I'm injecting
them
right into my system.
Right into your system. Those vibes are being straight injected.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah.
Well, I guess thanks for hanging
thanks
out.
Thanks for hanging
with
out.
Me.
That's all the episode we have today, everybody.
Episode? I just came here to hang out with my friends.
Oh, I forgot. Wait. I hid the microphone so you wouldn't see.
Oh, is that what this bushel of flowers is
it
in front
is.
Of me?
Yes, I was trying to record a podcast with you. I'm sorry. I lied to you.
You know what? How fucking dare you?
Wait, but I'm sorry. I feel like I've just really just ruined our friendship. But while you're here, do you want to talk about Desperate Housewives?
You know, if I wasn't already sitting down in here, I might say no, but I really want to repair
our friendship.
Our friendship.
Yeah,
yes.
Oh, thank God. Okay, so like you have your flower mic.
Yes.
I have my body mic, my wire that I hid.
Yes. You have a lav mic.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about season 2, episode 4.
4.
I always get the episode number wrong in my brain, but we're on episode 4. We're kicking it through season 2.
We're flying by.
Flying through season 2, baby. This episode premiered on October 16th, 2005. It was written by John Pardee and Joey Murphy, some classic DH writers, and directed by a new director, Robert Duncan McNeil, who some people may know. He was an actor, actually, before he was a director.
Oh.
And he was in like 130 episodes of Star Trek Voyager. He played Lieutenant Tom Paris, who apparently is like a main character. I'm not a Trekkie.
I've never seen Voyager.
Yeah, so he was in the entirety of Star Trek Voyager, apparently. And then he became a director.
Hell
and
yeah.
He's worked on like a zillion TV shows and still does to this day.
Nice.
I thought it was a pretty well-directed episode.
Yeah.
So, way to go. And I have something kind of sad to say this week for Sondheim Watch.
Oh.
This episode is called My Heart Belongs to Daddy, which is
I did
very
notice
funny.
That. For once I noticed the title of the
My
of
Heart
the show.
It Belongs to Daddy. This isn't Sondheim. I could
what?
Not find anywhere on the internet saying that this was Sondheim, and the only thing I could find is that it is a Cole Porter song from a musical called Leave It to Me that is so not well known it does not even have a Wikipedia page.
Is this like a thing like they did in season 1 where they just forgot that they were supposed to be doing Sondheim?
I guess. But I feel like we've been like doing Sondheim for a while now, so it feels weird that there's a random one that's not. I even Googled like My Heart Belongs to Daddy Sondheim. Daddy Sondheim,
Daddy
my heart
Sondheim.
Belongs to you.
Daddy Sondheim Watch.
Daddy Sondheim Watch. But I couldn't find anything. Like, truly, like, the only thing I got was that it's a Cole Porter song. So.
Interesting.
So I've been let down this week on Sondheim
Watch.
I'm
so sorry.
There's no Sondheim to watch. It's Porter Watch this week.
Well, Porter is one of the twins.
Porter is one of the twins and brings all back to Desperate Housewives.
It really does. Everything always connects back.
Oh, do you want to dive into this freaking sode?
I would love to dive into this freaking sode.
Hell yeah. I mean,
I'm going to pop a Zyrtec for these flowers.
Yes,
gonna,
so you don't get allergies.
Yes, and I'm gonna get ready. It's non-drowsy.
Oh, thank
so.
God. Thank God. Thank God. Okay. We could take a nap afterward.
Yeah.
We can snuggle each other.
Yeah. Also, we're not sponsored by Zyrtec.
We're not. We're only sponsored by Overcast.
Yes.
Okay. So we open a scene that I thought was cool and then went weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of a MA. I call her MA in my notes, Mary Alice.
Yeah, so do I sometimes.
Monologue where she's talking about how the inmates really like Tuesdays at the Fairview County Jail where Carlos is. Because they like seeing Gabby walking by looking hot.
Yeah.
There was a guy just rubbing his ass cheeks that I thought was so funny.
I actually didn't see that.
That guy, he was just straight up just rubbing his butt cheeks.
Okay.
to entice Gabrielle, I guess.
Interesting. Which I thought, like, look at this juicy dump truck of an ass. Look at this
juicy dump truck. And Gabby could not be fazed.
No.
But I was. I was fazed by this man's dump truck ass.
Dump truck watch.
Dump truck watch. That inmate.
Also, her fits.
I wrote constant fit watch.
Yeah.
They were actually very good.
They were good.
Gabby's outfits are weird.
She had like this like veil thing at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of good fit watch. I got to put them all on Instagram because they were very good fits.
Hell yeah. But yeah, she like the inmates love Tuesdays because Gabby comes in. They always like
they
want to call her.
Cat call, yeah.
And there's a scene we quickly jump to where she's talking to Carlos's lawyer on the way out of the jail, and she's talking about how she wants a conjugal visit.
Yes, apparently.
And she like,
I love
wants
that actor
it very badly. Yes, he's in a lot of stuff. He's a very good like character actor.
I like him a lot.
Yeah,
he's like, which is weird because like, yeah, I guess I never thought about like what even is the process of getting a conjugal visit. I guess I just thought that like anyone could have it if they wanted it, but I guess maybe you have to like appeal for it maybe.
Yeah.
But the lawyer is correct in being like, I'm trying to focus on getting your husband out of jail, not necessarily keeping him in where you can have sex. Like,
yeah,
if I get him out, you can have all the sex you would like. I think that's kind of his point, but he also is kind of mean
he
to her.
He calls her a bitch.
He calls her a bitch, and he also makes a kind of snide remark about John. Did you catch that? Where he was like, I'm not your maid or your gardener, huh?
Yeah.
And then that's why she slapped him.
She slaps him. He calls her a bitch. And then the inmates start fucking hitting him through the gate with like broom
apologize
handles
to the lady, man.
They're like, come on, man, have some class.
I loved that is the thing. Yeah. But then it got weird.
They like fucking beat him. The guards throw tear gas.
Yeah, the guards throw tear gas. So like they start like they all have brooms for some reason or
yeah,
rakes.
That's
they're
what they're
all
like beating the lawyer with.
And then
the lawyer has like
blood in his mouth. Liz, I was literally like, I thought this was a fun scene, and then the tear gas got thrown in.
Yeah.
And then the lawyer was bleeding from the mouth.
Jesus
I was
Christ.
Like, is Gabby's murder count going to one? She joining Susan and Andrew
Jesus
on murder count? Yeah, so I didn't love that when like, because I kind of thought I was like, you know, I liked the bit of even though they catcall her, they want to be respectful to her. I was like, that's, you know, whatever, but it's funny. But yeah, then it got weird when people started bleeding and tear gas got thrown in.
The system is corrupt even
yes
in television.
Oh, for sure. But that was kind of the scene. Like Gabrielle was just like just standing there. Also, I find it weird that I feel like that's not like guests of a prison or a jail. I feel like they wouldn't walk through like an open air hallway past a bunch of inmates. Like I feel like that feels abnormal. Isn't there like a waiting room and you just go into another room? It just felt like a weird excuse to have this happen. You know, how is it
that's
you
fair
that talks about that, how it's like even when scenarios don't make sense, they do it for the bit.
Yeah,
that's what I felt like, why Gabby was walking down this weird outdoor hallway every Tuesday.
It was plot convenience.
There we go.
I guess like we should change it from plot convenience because it's like not super important to the plot.
Bit convenience. Yeah, it was a bit convenience moment. Same with the ice cream.
Yeah,
later. There's
spoiler alert.
There's no reason for that ice cream to exist other than for the bit. But that's that scene, basically.
Then we get into a Mary Alice voiceover where she starts talking about how all of the working dads on the lane have one thing in common, and it's that they get to return to their family each night and not feel guilty about the precious moments that they've missed.
Oh my God.
But all of the working mothers don't have that luxury.
They cry themselves to sleep.
Because mothers care more about their children than fathers.
Yeah, dads suck.
Dads don't care. They just want to play ball and watch sports.
Ugh, dads. So Lynette comes home. She sneaks in to tuck Parker in, and he's holding an umbrella.
Uh-oh. Also, there are no twins in those bunk beds.
No, when she peeked up, I was like, there's nothing.
You're
in there
acting. Like,
there was a single twin later, and I was like, where are they?
I was so confused.
Where are they? But Also, I need to say, every time I talked about Tom, I called him Hot Tom in my notes.
I literally saw Tom and I went, Mackenzie's going to think he's hot
he's
again.
He's hot again. And I'm saying I'm on Hot Tom Watch.
Yeah.
I don't know why with this scruff.
A new Instagram feed, Hot Tom Watch.
He's being hot. And I love it when a man is just emotionally present and available and supportive of his spouse.
That's true.
I liked Tom this episode. I'll get into it later more. But okay. Yeah. Hot Tom was cleaning up and I did write, he's like super dad now because the house mm-hmm. is clean, he's cooked dinner, he's being a little king, like talking to Lynette.
Yeah, she like goes to eat like a mountain of spaghetti on the table and he's like, actually, that's not for you, that's been sitting out for hours, this is yours, and pulls one out of the oven.
Warm food.
And she's like, what do you mean, who's this for? And we find out that Parker has an imaginary friend named Mrs. Mulberry.
She's beautiful, she's British. She's the coolest person in the world, and we get to know a lot about her over this episode.
Yeah,
so should we get into her a little bit more later, I guess?
Yeah, I guess, because like we really just find out that Mrs. Mulberry exists.
Yeah. And I think that like Tom describes her as like Mary Poppins-esque, which is funny. And Tom's like, it's chill, it's whatever, like kids
and
do that.
He says like, that's why Parker is sleeping with the umbrella.
Yes. And Lynette immediately is upset because she's like, he's replacing me with like a surrogate mommy. And he's like, I think it's pretty chill. I think it's fine. And that's kind of that whole scene, I feel like, is just Tom being like, don't worry about it, it's cool.
Yeah. And Lynette freaking out.
Yeah. Classic.
Classic. And then we cut to Mike and Susan.
Confusing.
I guess they went on a date. They kiss. And
she wants to fuck him. She just told him she didn't want to fuck.
Because, like, she's like, I mean, we're casual, but that doesn't mean we can't, like, do stuff. And Mike is like, I don't want to do stuff if we're casual. Like,
yeah,
I want to be with you.
Yeah, like, I really like that Mike is very, like, he's very like communicative of his boundaries in a very clear way.
Yeah,
because he's like, okay, cool, last week you pushed me off because we were casual, so in my brain casual means no sex, and now you want sex but you still want casual, and I'm confused.
Susan says this line where she's like, come on, we don't have to act like brother and sister.
He was just making out with you. Is that what you do with your brother?
I don't know, dude. I hope not. But like, yeah, like I really like Mike in this scene.
Yeah, I like that he was like, you need to be one way or the other, because I can't be in the middle.
Susan's like, yeah, we don't have any commitments except that I expect us to be committed to each other and not see any other people.
And we're in love, and eventually we'll move in and we'll probably get married, but no commitments.
And like,
Susan's being really wishy-washy.
Mike says that, like, listen, Zach is part of the package. So
Zach,
right,
who's
now,
not
so
been
like,
around for three episodes,
yeah,
it's part of the package.
And like, Susan has to deal with it if she wants to be with him or not. Because like, if she doesn't want to deal with it, then he can't be like, do this anymore.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think Susan was being selfish here when she was like,
yeah,
that's fine, Zach can be in the picture, when she's obviously like, she doesn't want him.
No,
in the
and
picture.
It gets into it later a lot. Like that last scene later, which I'm excited to talk about because I think I'm curious what our thoughts are going to be on them.
Yeah.
They're going to be similar or different. But yeah, like she's clearly just saying words so that she doesn't lose Mike instead of actually like believing that it's the same thing she's capable of.
Yeah.
Like, I think she knows she's not capable of accepting Zach, but she's going to try her hardest to pretend so that she doesn't lose Mike.
Yeah. I feel like it's just like a selfish move out of fear, and like she doesn't feel like she's being selfish, but
no.
I'm like,
Edie even calls her out on it later too. Queen Edie. But also I wrote this like not dating storyline lasted 2 seconds.
Yes.
Like, why did it exist? Who knows?
And then they bone down.
She runs to Mike's house.
She's like, I can be ready in 20 seconds, and that's including travel time.
She was horned up. Yes. She was ready to go.
And then we cut to Gabby and Carlos. And they are talking, and Carlos is mad because he's like, you incited a prison riot.
Which
and Gabby's
is valid.
Like, well, Gabby's like, it was more of a melee. Basically, the scene is like, Gabby saying that their marriage is on shaky ground, and like they have to have sex to repair it. Like, that's what I got out of this scene.
Yeah,
she
basically, she's like,
about.
We need to fuck her, our marriage is going to fall apart. Which, like, whoa, buddy, if that's the only thing keeping your marriage together. Red flag. I also wrote, this is some horny rage fuel.
Yes.
I'm saying from Gabby.
Because she was saying, like, I miss us having a fight and then having sex afterwards.
Yeah, she was like, there's no payoff to our fighting. Because now all we do is fight and we don't have sex afterwards. Now there's no payoff. And I'm like, that's an unhealthy relationship balance. Like,
also, I apologize for that weird voice I just did. I don't know why.
What voice?
I was just like, hey.
I like this Gabby voice. Carlos.
That's what Gabby sounds like.
I loved it. Whisper sweet nothings to me in that voice, please.
ASMR.
But yeah, I wrote up, was like, this is some horny rage fuel. Because Gabby slams on
it
the
really
table
is.
And is like, we gotta fuck, dude. And one everyone day. In the room is like, whoa, okay.
One day we're gonna have a pins.
This is horny
rage
fuel.
God, I want that so bad. And that's basically that scene.
Yes.
And then we cut to Bree and George.
Ew.
Bree kisses him on the forehead. That's like...
That's us.
Yes.
I texted you when I watched it. And I was like, why is that us? The way she just so daintily was kissing him on the forehead. Like he was just getting communion. I don't know.
We recreate
that photo.
Little... It's a, we gif it.
It was so soft and weird. And he's like... I understand if this is my George apparently. I understand if that's, you know, kissing on the lips. Lip kissing is a little too forward right now. And she's like, thank you, George. And it's just like, I hate him so much. He's just a little creepy fucking boy. And she grabs his hands for a moment.
And Andrew comes out.
My favorite little
him.
Evil twunk.
Yes.
Evil twunk also we need on a shirt.
Yes. Evil twunk.
With
oh,
Andrew's
God, I want
face
that
on it.
Shirt.
Evil
I
twunk
want it.
He's not evil, though. He's so fucking valid in this episode,
he
I think.
Really is.
I actually am so on Andrew's side. He sees this, and he's like, huh. And Andrew kind of comes and stands by Bree in a really, really, like... authoritative way when he overhears that Bree is inviting George to have a home cooked meal because Bree mentions that they've been eating out a lot, and George accepts, and they have this fucking standoff because he's like, cool, she said it's getting late, take that as a hint, leave right now. And George is like, I'll leave when I'm ready. And they just sort of have this
the interaction. I was like,
the tension.
George, if you try to fucking kill Andrew, I will kill you.
I will jump into this show and I will kick George's ass if he tries to hurt my little prince.
I don't think Andrew would die because I think Andrew's like a long stay.
Yeah,
but like
little
I feel
prince
like
Andrew
he would hurt him.
Because Bree's Queen Bree, so he's Prince
yes,
Andrew.
Yes, he's Prince Andrew.
Prince Andrew.
Princess Danielle.
Princess Danielle, you got it. She's not a princess to me.
No, she's just
but,
kind of.
But little Prince Andrew?
Yeah.
That's a little prince for me.
But
yeah, him and George are pushing each other.
Yeah.
I can't believe a grown
fucking man. He
pushes
George to the ground, right?
Yeah, because he pushes George to the ground. Cannot believe a grown man pushed a teenager.
Yeah.
And Bree like snaps on both of them and is like, you're both gonna be at dinner, I don't want this behavior to be happening. And Bree just kind of yells at them and then storms into the house.
Yeah. And then we cut to Lynette and her only child.
Apparently we never see the others anymore. Maybe they didn't want to pay them, I don't know.
Yeah, she's like trying to hang out with him. She like wakes him up early and is like, come on, let's go get donuts before school. And they get in the car and he's like, wait, Mrs. Mulberry's not here. So she like opens the door for Mrs. Mulberry and he's like, wait, Mrs. Mulberry's umbrella's not here. And so she goes into the house, and that's where we see a twin.
A twin.
Just one.
Just one. Getting a little bag packed. Hot Tom's there being like, what's up, honey?
And she's like, I need the umbrella. And she like rips apart the room and can't find it. So she brings out a hat. And Parker's like, no, she wants her umbrella. It's in the shower. Like, go get it. And then Lynette snaps at him.
Lynette fully snaps at Parker.
She's like, I am not going back inside. We are going, like,
to love each other and bond. And I wrote, Parker is king of boundaries.
I wrote, Parker Nation, rise up.
Parker Nation. He is king of boundaries. He went like, this is a toxic situation and I'm gonna remove myself from it. And this little bitch clicks that fucking seatbelt, climbs out, opens the door for Miss Mulberry and is like, we don't want donuts. And then I was like, I'm sad for Lynette's situation, but yeah. I also loved this Parker moment.
Mm-hmm.
King of boundaries.
King of boundaries.
I love him.
And then we cut back to Andrew. He's wearing like an old shirt with just some holes in it. And Bree stops him and is like, "You cannot go out looking like that.
Because you'll bring shame to the family."
Yes.
We are in 1792 and you are going to bring shame to the family and we will never marry rich.
Yeah. Like, she's like buttoning up a shirt or whatever for him.
Yes.
I also wrote Andrew Nation Rise Up here.
Andrew Nation Rise Up.
Because like Andrew is talking and he's like, "Listen, like I'm not going to go to your dinner. Like you can't make me."
Yeah.
And then Bree like
blackmails him?
Yeah. She's like, "You want to do swimming stuff, right? And you have a meet coming up and you can afford the entry fee on your own."
I also would have been like, yeah, because I got kicked off of my school swim team.
Yeah.
Because someone put weed in my locker, so I can't swim for free at mm-hmm. school anymore.
Yeah.
Bree.
Bree.
Bree is the reason why they have to pay the swim fees.
Jesus.
Because didn't he get kicked off the team at school?
I think so, yeah.
So I'm assuming he now does
he
it at
the...
He at
least got, like, suspended or something. Yeah.
So I think that's why he has to do it probably at the club now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Bree, like, fully blackmails her son into, And he asks if she wants to get serious with George.
Also... Oh, sorry. You go on.
Oh, no. I thought it was interesting because she's like, "I don't know." And he's like, "Well, like, what kind of shame do you think is going to be brought into the family when they see that you're dating the pharmacist like a month after dad
yeah.
died?" And I agree.
I agree as well.
It doesn't look good, especially with the insurance stuff that didn't come up this episode. So yeah. I'm nervous what's going to happen next episode.
Also, there's a next episode. It's not going to come back till 5 episodes later.
You're right.
The line, like Bree says the line in this interaction where she's like, "George isn't trying to be your father," which I thought was kind of delicious because
yeah.
he is.
Yeah.
I'm smart. I can tell.
And then we cut to Susan is, and I think there's, so like in the cul-de-sac of Wisteria Lane, there's like a little park area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, where Susan was. And then Bree and George end up there later. So I'm wondering if they're using this little park area because it's like in the middle of the
lane.
It's
like a new set piece.
Yeah. So yeah. Susan's in this little park area hanging signs for Zach for missing persons. And I was like, and I read my notes. Hasn't he been missing for like 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Like, I know there's like a time period in which the police just take over.
I think it's like 48 hours you call the police or whatever.
Yeah. So,
but maybe they didn't call the police because they don't trust cops.
That's true.
Like, you shouldn't.
Mike does say ACAB.
Yeah.
And that's why I love him.
Yeah.
But Susan is still hanging up these signs and Edie in this electric pink cast struts over to Susan
yeah.
to ask about the signs. And Edie kind of admits that through the grapevine of Susan to Julie to Carl to her, she found out about the fact that Mike is Zach's dad, and she is blabbing it all
yeah.
over Wisteria Lane.
She sent a couple emails.
I sent a couple emails. I just love how much of a bitch she is.
Yeah, she calls Susan a conniving little shrew.
And she was, okay, I did, and I do not think that she should be the lesbian of the episode, this episode, because that would be three
That's
in a fucking
fair.
Row.
That's fair. We need to branch out.
We need somebody else. We need to branch away from Edie, but I did want to nominate her for when she was like, "You conniving little shrew. Why aren't we closer?"
Yeah.
Edie, like, do you think that the directors, like, I know in my heart that Edie, I know, and I'm sorry if I'm ruining any dreams here. I know in my heart Edie and Susan will never be together.
Yeah.
But do you think that directors just gave Nicolette Sheridan the note? Just pretend like you're flirting with her. Because I feel like every Edie interaction, she's very like, Susan,
yeah.
hello. Like, it's just very gay and weird.
Yeah, I feel like the big note, it might not like be a Susan specific thing, but I think it's just like a... Whenever Edie is talking to anybody,
just
like
flirt,
play up the flirt card.
God, oh, to talk to Edie Britt and be flirted with inadvertently.
Oh yeah.
But there's not much to that scene other than, well, Edie does like drag the shit out of Susan.
Yeah, she does.
She drags her for fucking filth. And I think we talked about this earlier because she's sort of like, "Oh, I see what you're doing. You're pretending to be mm-hmm. the supportive girlfriend because you don't think he'll ever be found." Because Susan kind of admits, like,
yeah.
whatever. It's like, no, he's not going to come back anyway. And so Edie's like, "Oh, so you don't even think he's going to come back, But you get the good girlfriend points by hanging these signs up, mm-hmm. but you still get what you want. And yeah. that's what leads to the conniving little shrew. And I agree. I think that Susan is doing this for the points mm-hmm. of being a supportive partner.
So do I.
And she genuinely doesn't think that Zach is going to come back. And yeah. if we did not see him this episode, I also would not think he was coming back.
Yes.
Spoiler alert. We see Zach later. But like, yeah, like if we didn't see him this episode, I would have just been like, cool, he's gone forever because they're never going to bring this character back.
And then we cut to David Bradley.
Weird. Just cut.
Why is that weird? He's the most successful lawyer on Wisteria Lane. Or sorry, in Fairview.
Fairview, the whole city of Eagle just State.
The lane has a lawyer.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yes, this is our Wisteria Lane lawyer.
Specifically
if
for
you go
the
to
lane.
Cottage Grove, fuck that place. He's ours. But basically, he's a very successful lawyer in Fairview. He sleeps with all of his women clients.
He's sleazy.
Yeah. And
I told you this out of the podcast, but I want to tell the listeners, this actor is Adrian Pastar. And if you are a fan of the Chicks, once known as the Dixie Chicks, who isn't? Cowboy Take Me Away, best song ever written. Their new song, Gaslighter, that was very like popular this year, mm-hmm. that was about the lead singer's horrific marriage falling apart, was about this guy.
So beautiful.
He was the guy who dated Natalie in the Chicks, and Gaslighter's about him. And I think it's very funny that he has been typecast, clearly.
Hell
he's
yeah.
a sleaze in real life, and he's a sleaze in this show.
He's just himself.
He's just himself.
But he's not going to take Gabby's case.
No.
He's like, listen, there was a whole gay bashing thing. Like, I don't think that'd be good for me to take this case.
Which I guess is valid, even yeah. though I don't like the guy. He kind of, do you think, I couldn't tell what this look picked up on when she was saying something like, the guy he attacked in the courtroom definitely wasn't gay. Believe me. She was being pretty overt about it. Mm-hmm. And he made a face. Do you think he began hitting on her because he picked up that she had cheated?
Probably.
Okay, because that's what I thought that was, but then I doubted myself. But like, you know, he gave her kind of like a look
yeah.
when she said that, and then he kind of shifted to, I'll take the case. Also, do you want to fuck me?
Well, at first he was basically telling her that her marriage is doomed and she needs a divorce, and he yeah. still wasn't going to take the case.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
That was later. So like spoiler alert, like he hits on her a little bit later. But like, this whole thing is like, listen,
ahead of myself.
Your marriage is doomed. It's okay. We're repairing our relationship.
Oh yeah, I forgot that we broke up at the beginning of the episode.
But
it's already out of my mind.
Hey,
yeah,
it's all right. Oh, thank you. Basically, like this scene is him telling her that like your marriage is doomed. You can't survive a marriage while he's in jail and you're out here. You have to have sex with people. And I think he does kind of be like, and like, listen, like if you want to have sex, like there's other ways to do it.
I just wrote she insults him. I don't remember what she said, but she storms out.
She insults him, and that's when I went, oh my god, he's in love with her now,
because of the way he took his little glasses yeah. off and like looked at the door. I was like, that gave me the impression that this is going to be a longer love triangle, and I'll talk about it later. I'm almost worried it's going to be.
Yeah.
Because of Gabby's look at the end yeah. in that scene, I'm very worried that it's going to be a love triangle. I'm like, why does she pick the worst men if it is? I don't know if it is, because I know that I'm the one who's seen the show, mm-hmm. genuinely don't remember. So I hope that it's not a love triangle, because he sucks.
And then we cut to Lynette. She's at the school talking to the principal.
Meeting with the teachers.
Like the teacher, the principal, and probably like the vice principal or something. A counselor, probably.
Yeah.
And we find out that Parker fucking hit his teacher with the umbrella.
Well, Mrs. Mulberry did.
Mrs. Mulberry probably
did. Mrs. Mulberry, she's
Mrs. Moles.
Crazy. Mrs. Mulberry, like, Moles? Miss Moles?
Miss Moles.
Miss Moles just like...
Miss Moles berries.
Miss Bear Bear, she fucking, we know she's a wild girl. You
yes.
know what I mean? Like, hitting people with umbrellas, I feel like feels very on par for yeah. what we know about Molly Bear Bear.
Miss Mole Rachel Berry.
Yes, Miss Mole Rachel Berry. sorry. I wish I could think of better names because I love this bit. And I wrote, Parker, what are you doing, my boy, in my notes. But Lynette is like, the teachers kind of, they lay it on thick for the bit.
You really
how
do.
They're like, usually when someone dies or leaves the child's life in a way that damages them severely and emotionally, this is why they have imaginary friends. Is there any reason why that would happen, Lynette?
And she starts bawling.
Fucking weeping in the office.
Oh my God. And then if you look really close, actually, I don't know if you wrote this, if you saw this, mm-hmm. but if you look at like the window behind the, why are you laughing?
I'm not laughing. I'm sorry.
If you look at the window
I know
behind,
you're being dead serious. That's yeah. why I'm totally not laughing.
If you look in the window.
In the window?
Behind the principal that was talking, because there's like a little like kind of foggy window.
Oh, I thought it was a painting.
No, that's a window.
Okay.
It's stained glass. You can see Mrs. Mulberry and Ashley looking inside.
Ashley and Mrs. Mulberry are
yeah,
together?
They're friends.
That's really
Mrs.
cool.
Mrs. Mulberry is actually Ashley's mother.
Whoa, that's cool.
Yeah, it's some deep...
deep lore.
Desperate Housewives season 2 lore that I have in my book.
Oh my God.
I got a book recently with trivia.
I didn't see her. What does she look like?
Ashley?
Mrs. Mulberry. I know what Ashley looks like. Yeah. I didn't see this.
Ember, she
Ember, yeah. yeah.
She's just very beautiful.
Yeah.
Her hair goes down to the floor.
Whoa, that's so long.
And she doesn't braid it or anything.
What?
She's just
kind of
like, yeah.
Holy shit.
She wears like a very big hat with no feathers or anything. It's just like a bowler hat, but like four times the size of her head.
Is she the fucking like ghost from Haunting of Hill House?
You know, she might be. She might have had some other work in a different show.
The
that
bowler
might have been
hat.
Her.
Guy, yeah. She's pretty great. I that's incredible. I don't know if I should bring it up now, but I did have a weird thought about Mrs. Mulberry.
What's your weird thought?
Because I couldn't think of any other lesbians.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give it to Edie a third time in
no.
a row. Because that's too much. I love you, Edie, but we have to have different.
We have to branch out. We have to get some Birkenstocks in there.
We have to get some Birkenstocks. I was thinking, what if Mrs. Mulberry was our lesbian of the episode?
Yes. Yes. Bowler hat four times as big as her head. Like,
that's
a lesbian.
That's a lesbian, of course. I don't know what photo I'll post.
Do you want me to make something? I'll grab the screenshot of what I just talked about and we'll post that.
But yeah, I don't know. I couldn't think of any other lesbians. Is it too left field to give it to Mrs. Mulberry?
I think it's just left field enough.
Because, I mean, like, you know, a woman who just hangs out with a kid, hits people with umbrellas, it wears a bowler hat four times the size of her head. That's a lesbian. So I guess Mrs. Mulberry is our lesbian in the episode because I have no other lesbians.
Yeah.
This show needs to give us more lesbians.
This season. This season specific.
Because we are lacking on lesbians this season in a way that is upsetting me.
We had a bounty last season.
We're so bountiful. So hopefully we get some more. But for this week, mm-hmm. congratulations, Mrs. Mulberry. You are a lesbian of the episode.
Yes. Hell yeah.
Yeah. And after Lynette weeps, we cut to dinner at the Vandekamps.
Yes.
And Andrew is being a fake little bitch because I love him.
Yes.
And Brie and Danielle are kind of like getting some dessert, I think, in the kitchen. And Danielle is like, Andrew's being weird. And Brie is like, he's being so polite and laughing at all of George's jokes. And Danielle's like, yeah, they're not funny jokes.
Yeah, she's like, that's why he's being weird.
Yeah. So Danielle, I like that Danielle is under, like, I did like this.
Yeah.
I like that she's under no, she feels no need to be polite or nice. She's like, Andrew's being a fucking weirdo. I kind of loved that.
Yeah.
I want to see more Danielle-Andrew bonding.
Yeah.
I want to see some more sibling action.
Yeah. I want to see them being like, you're a fucking idiot to each other. Like, that's what I want.
When Andrew was like, no one asked you or whatever when she was weeping. I want more sibling interactions.
Yeah.
So please give it to me.
I want them to fight. I want my sibling representation in media.
We need some sibling rep.
And then it cuts to Andrew and Rex. Not Rex.
Rip.
I'm
fucking
doing it
rip
again.
Dude,
I'm doing it again.
Fucking rip, dude.
The funeral music starts playing. We cut to Andrew and George.
Hey.
And George is like, you gay? That's not what he says. He's like, have you ever been with a woman? Have you ever done that?
Hey, George, you a fucking virgin?
Are you a virgin, George?
I need to know if my mom is going to get good dick.
Yeah, because he's like, because my parents had really good sex.
My parents were fucking nonstop.
It was so weird, but it was...
The payoff was good.
Yeah, the payoff was good.
Because if you don't realize what he's doing, it's like, why are you saying this?
Yeah. But he's trying to rile George up.
And he does the impression of Bree's orgasm. No,
isn't that bizarre? That's the sound my mom makes when she climaxes.
And George looks shocked.
Yeah.
And at that moment, that's when Bree and Danielle and them come in with the pie. And
Andrew's like, hey, thanks for the pie, Mom. And then...
Gee golly, Mom. Thanks for this delicious pie and incredible dinner, Mommy.
And George goes, go to your room. And everyone's like, what the fuck?
Oh, no, wait. First, because Bree eats the pie, does the same noise as the orgasm, and then Andrew mouths, that's it, to George. Yeah. And that's why he flips the fuck out.
I'm sorry for swearing.
We swear all the time.
I totally missed that because I was taking notes.
Oh, you did? Yeah, so she does the noise, and she's like...
Oh my god.
Which is wild to think that he could punish someone who is not his child.
Yeah, he's like, go to your room. And everybody's like, you can't tell him to go to his room.
Yeah, Bree is like, what did he say?
He's also like, I can't tell you what he said to me. Just back me up.
Yeah, and she's like, George, no. You can't, no. If you don't tell me what he did wrong, I'm not going to discipline him. And then little piss baby George is being a piss baby.
And he walks off.
Prince Andrew. I wrote King in my notes, but now I realize he's a prince.
And then we cut to Gabby getting a voicemail from the lawyer man. He's passing over the name of a divorce lawyer.
Yeah.
And that's what prompts her to like go back to him.
Yeah.
And it's like, where do you get off like doing that?
Yeah.
And
that's pretty
fucked up. He's like, listen, like, you want what you want when you want it, and you can't always have that. And she's like, I am trying to repair my fucking marriage, and like, I am a good wife, and like, blah, blah, blah.
Gabby is very much just like, I am the most chaste woman on earth.
Because this is when he hits on her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're doing this weird, insulting, flirty thing, and he backs up pretty quickly when she's like, I'm pregnant, dude.
Yeah.
Goodbye. And he backs off. But does he... I think we're led to believe he at least takes the case.
Oh, he does take the case.
Because she's like... He's like, fine, I'll do it for this much. And she's like, you'll do it for less. And I'm getting a conjugal visit tomorrow.
Yes. And that's that scene. And then we cut to Mike and Susan. Mike and Susan are back at the park. They're going to split up and put a bunch of posters around. And at first I thought like Susan was going to do something like trash the posters and just like toss them in like a garbage.
Yeah,
but... She doesn't. She goes and she buys some ice cream for her and Mike, and then she just asks the ice cream man to like pass out the flyers for when he gets customers, and he goes, hey, isn't that kid right there?
That kid that's like 12 feet away?
And she looks behind her, and Zach's just sitting on a bench.
He's just, yeah, he was seeming to be like talking to some other kids maybe.
Yeah.
He looks really dirty. Mm-hmm. Like he looks like he's been sleeping outside, which he probably has. For like what, 2 weeks now?
Probably.
And she runs after him and he bolts the second he sees her. And then a classic
comedy
Susan, comedy queen Susan Meyer running, and this fucking ice cream is just
it's just soup. So she got ice cream soup and it's just going
just
all
fucking
over.
Slamming all over her white tank top. Jesus. As she's racing after him. Eventually she kind of corners him, but he grabs a big stick or something.
Yeah, and he like acts like he's gonna hit her
and she gets scared
closer,
and she throws the ice cream at him and runs away,
and she runs to Mike.
Yes.
And Mike's like, whoa, Susan, what happened? And
I love your Mike impression.
What happened,
what Susan? Happened Suze?
And she's
Susie
about
you. That's my Carl.
Susie Q. There's this moment of pause where she's about to tell him what she saw.
Susan.
And then she just goes, I got you some ice cream.
How did he believe that?
I don't
She's
know.
She's covered in fucking ice.
I don't know. How do you believe it? Your face just gets red.
How do you believe it? That was. I'm mad at Susan for not telling him, but I'm also annoyed at Mike for not seeing the blatant lie that she just told him.
It's a bit.
I know, and it comes up later in a way. I have thoughts about that last Zach scene, but
But that's that.
Yeah, and we pretty quickly cut to, I think, the Solis house.
Yeah, Susan telling Bree and Gabby, finally some wife interaction.
Well, Ned is stuck in her own storyline. Yeah. She cannot be bothered
She's
to interact.
Working now.
When they cut back to her after this, I was like, oh, Lynette's just doing her own thing.
That's what I felt like Lynette was doing in season one.
Yeah. They never incorporate Lynette with the ladies.
No. They do sometimes, but not a lot.
Not as much as I would like it. I want them all to be together. Also, is Gabby drinking wine?
I don't know.
I think she was drinking wine in the scene. And I know that, like, some people say you can drink moderate amounts of wine if you're pregnant, depending on the wine. But, like, why risk it?
I don't know.
Whatever, Gabby.
Maybe it's grape juice.
Maybe.
So Susan just gets finished telling Bree and Gabby what she saw at the park, meaning Zach.
Yeah.
Who she saw. Gabby's just like, thank God you were wearing flats.
Yes.
Gabby essentially says, like, I think it's good that you're not telling Mike because Zach is wild.
Zach
and, like,
is bad news, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Susan's, like, kind of calling out her own bullshit almost immediately. Mm-hmm. She's like, I totally should have told him. And Gabby's like, no, girl, you're good.
But then Bree cuts in. And I really liked Bree in this scene because it made
too.
Me feel... It made me think about... the Bree Zach moments from season one
yes.
that we didn't get a lot of, but we just got
a
little
bit. They were so good when we got them, though.
And I don't know if they intended for this or if it was an accident.
I loved it. I thought it tied it back to season one. And like you said, I love those Bree Zach scenes from season one. Like when she opens up about her mother's death, when she finds him at the house that one time and he just got yelled at. Like, I liked their connection in season one. It felt like it kind of fizzled away.
But then Bree comes in and she basically tells Susan, like, listen, he's still like a kid and he's still Mary Alice's son.
Oh, that broke my heart.
He has people here who, like, care for him. And, like, he shouldn't just be out on the streets.
Yeah, like, when she said he's Mary Alice's son, that, like, broke my heart. Because it's like, they watched him grow up. You know what I mean? They've all known him since he was a kid. And, like, I think it's just kind of... interesting and sad because I think a lot of his, like, issues started when his mom died, which is valid. That's what happens when you're a kid and your parent dies probably and you were close to them. And, like, I just feel like if Paul had not kept everyone away from him, if he had been able to, like, be loved by the ladies and, like, the people who loved Mary Alice, I don't think he'd be in the situation if he had the, like, care he needed to, like, cope well. Because then all he
what
did
happened was
he birthed unhealthy coping mechanisms and it made his mental health go to trash.
His father also, like, put him in, like, an institution where he was forced to take drugs and had no therapy. And,
I agree. I think that, like, it just made me sad. I thought Bree was completely right because she was like, he's not going to get better if he's gone.
And, like, yeah. And, like, I guess that's just, like, something that Susan would have to, like, come to terms with because I just feel like she still really doesn't want Zach around Julie.
Oh, we've seen
and,
that later. Yeah.
She's going to have to pick, like.
Yeah. I have some thoughts about that later.
So do I.
Oh, I'm excited. But that's all we get right now, really, is Bree saying that to Susan. And Susan's thinking about it. But we then cut to Lynette, as I said, truly just on her own storyline. And she's talking to Tom about how upset she is, that she's upsetting Parker. And I actually really loved the Tom and Lynette vibes in this scene.
Yeah.
I thought he was being really supportive and sweet as best he can. I mean, like, I wouldn't know what to say either. He's just sort of like, it's a thing that kids do. And, like, it's his coping mechanism. And he's not, I mean, I can't say he's not hurting anybody, I guess, because he hit someone with an umbrella. But... I don't know. I understand Lynette is sad, but I like Hot Tom being chill and being like, do you want a hug? I don't know.
Yeah. He suggests, like, doing more hugs with
Parker. He was like, I don't know, just try as much as you can to spend more time with him specifically.
Yeah. And then Lynette goes upstairs to talk to Parker and, you know, Mulberry's there.
Mulberry, she's chilling.
She's chilling, reading Parker a bedtime story. Oh,
that's when I saw her. That's who she is. Yeah.
It wasn't just Claire. She wasn't back.
I thought it was Claire. Yeah. You're right. Claire or an apparition. Oh, okay. She is kind of ghostly looking with her
a little bit.
Giant bowler hat and her hair that goes down to the floor.
Yeah.
But I did see her in that scene. You're right.
And Lynetta's like, well, we're going to have to stop reading. I'm going to tuck you in. And listen, like, I love you, and, like, I care about you a lot, and, like, even though I'm at work, I just want you to know that, like, I love you so much. And then Parker goes, you're a fucking liar.
I think what upsets him, too, is when she says all this stuff, and then she's like, you know, I'm real. Mrs. Mulberry isn't. And the moles is right there.
She's right there.
The fact that Lynette would say that right in front of her.
Yes.
And Parker's like, she is real, bitch.
Yeah.
And slaps Lynette.
And then Lynette goes flying. Jeff Melman.
Jeff Melman directed this secretly. Yeah. And so, but yeah, he's upset. He hides himself and makes Lynette go away. King of boundaries. He's like, get away from me. I don't want you, Mom.
Parker Nation rise.
Parker Hive.
We get shirts.
Parker Hive, but it's just a little picture of little Parker. A little pin of Parker's face on it. This is Parker Nation.
We are a part of the Parker Nation. And then we cut to George. Do we need a second?
I'm still laughing. I'm sorry, audience. What's the scene about, Liz? All I wrote is that Brie eats watermelon with a fork and knife.
Yeah, I noticed that. What the fuck, Brie? That's how you know she's up.
She's a queen. Uptight queen.
Did you know that I can't be messy? I'm gonna eat this watermelon with a fork and knife. I bet she eats pizza with a fork and knife too.
Oh, absolutely. And I have in my past. You know, sometimes it's too greasy and too hot.
I think I used to do that when I was like a kid, but that's it. Because I used to choke on the cheese.
We're getting off the rails.
Do you ever do that?
What's the deal with choking on cheese? On
cheese pizza, huh?
Your type 5 is getting better and better every time you do it.
I couldn't eat mozzarella sticks as a kid for the same reason. I have vivid memories.
I, as an adult, like this year, choked on sushi, and I'm still scared to eat sushi.
Oh my god!
We need to.
Anyway, Brie and George. They are talking, eating watermelon.
She's breaking up with him, kind of.
Yeah, because Brie says, "I need to spend more time with Andrew because, he's getting pretty wild, and I just think we should spend more time together as a family."
I think that she's absolutely correct.
Yes.
I think she, especially since, like, his dad just fucking died. Yes. Danielle's dad just fucking died. Her husband just fucking died. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the ending monologue where they talk about Rex. I'm getting ahead of myself. It may be sad. But, like, yeah, I think that that's what you need to do when you're all grieving. It's still very, very fresh. I think that if there is any acting out or any, like, you know, disposition changes, I think it is because of the grief and the weirdness. And I think that her parental instincts are absolutely correct, that she needs to spend time with her kid to make sure that he can get through this grieving process and be healthy about it.
Yeah.
I'm loving Brie more this season.
Yeah, so am I.
I don't know. I feel like last season, like, I always liked her.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm loving her this season.
Yeah.
But I'm worried about her.
Yeah.
Because little fucking George.
Sometimes I go, I love Brie, and then I remember that she is a bust of Ronald Reagan in her house somewhere. And then I go, do I?
Oh, we had to steal in the game.
We did. We had to steal that in the Desperate Housewives video game.
Who I've not seen on our YouTube channel, we have some videos, and on Liz's Twitch, which I can link both in our little show notes. We've been playing the Desperate Housewives game. we made our own housewife and we talked to the other wives, mm-hmm. and we had to steal Bree's Ronald Reagan bust.
Because there's a little side quests you can do to just make your own money.
Where you just steal people's shit.
You just break into everyone's house.
And our housewife is a bad girl. Yes. So she steals everything.
Yes.
But getting back to this, George says at first he's okay with being broken up.
But then he starts talking about, well, if you're so worried about Andrew, why don't you send him back to camp?
Wasn't there counseling there? for him. And you can do both. You can send him off to camp for a year and then spend time with him.
And Bree is like, I don't really think that's a good idea. Like, he's not that bad right now.
Yeah.
But when she says that he's not that bad right now, you could see the spark in George's eyes. Oh. His evil, evil little eyes.
I wrote this music because it was doing very, like, hijinks music. Like, ding, 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 ding. Like, the music when some shit's about to go down, and I was like, George, get that sparkle out of your eyes.
Yeah.
I smack that sparkle right out, Georgie.
God, I want Roger Bart on this podcast. When George's arc is done one day,
we should absolutely invite Roger Bart.
If anybody who listens to this podcast
knows Roger Bart, we would love to talk to him about George.
Yes. And then we cut to Gabby and Carlos. They have sex. They get their conjugal visit.
Yep.
And that's all I wrote for this scene.
Yeah, that's basically it. They have sex, and she's like, "Do you think our relationship's gonna survive?" And he's like, "Yeah." That's kind of it.
Yeah.
But there was a moment in this that I did say I got nervous because he was like, "How's that new lawyer, by the way? Like, how's the new lawyer?
Yeah.
Do you like him? What kind of guy is he?" Or something. And then the bell rang, the phone rang, because they have to answer the phone to, like, let the cops know they're still there or whatever.
Yeah.
And she was making a face that made me think she was, like, I don't know. That's what made me nervous that there might be. I can't even describe the face, so I'm sorry, listeners. But, like, it was sort of like he was like, "What kind of guy is he? Like, do you like him?" Or he said something like that to where it was, like, loaded for Gabby. So when Gabby thought, "Do I like him?" she was, like, giving a look. And I just got, that's what made me worried that this is going to be a love triangle. Because I was like, is she considering fucking this lawyer?
Yeah. And then we cut to Susan going back to the park. Mm-hmm. Zach being in the exact place that she found him the first time. He's like rubbing his foot and it's like got a little bandage around it.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Are you going to run again?" And he's like, "I can't. I hurt my foot."
I got a boo-boo.
I got a boo-boo. And I mean, I think it was very sweet where she was like, "How about I buy you some food and we talk?"
Because he's like, "I don't want to go back."
Yeah.
And so she's like, "Cool, let me just buy you some food."
Yeah. And he lets her. Mm-hmm. So, like, he's drinking a big glass of milk with a burger and fries.
Oh, to eat that meal right now.
Oh,
that'd
yeah.
be delicious.
And she brings up, like, "Listen, like, there's a lot of people back on the lane who care about you. And, like, there's a lot of stuff, like, you don't even know about yet."
Well, she does tell him that Paul's alive.
Yes.
Because he's, like, actually shocked. He's like, "So you swear that Mr. Delfino didn't kill him?"
Yeah.
And she's like, "Yeah, for sure. He's alive.
Yes.
We just don't know where he is." And Zach poses that he could be in Utah because that's where Angela and Paul used to live. And this is an interesting scene. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I felt a way that I didn't anticipate myself feeling about it. Does it make sense?
Yes, like, I think so.
Like, I thought I would react differently, but then by the end of it, I was like, do I feel different? Because, you know, she's like, "People miss you," as you said. And he's like, "Oh, does Julie miss me?
Because I feel like I really messed it up with Julie."
And he's like, I ruined her life, but, like, I think about her every day, and I just really, really care about her. He kind of has this obsessive affection for Julie. That I thought Terry Hatcher, I really liked her acting in the scene, actually, because she did show that shift of, like, that fear she has about him talking to Julie. And I think in her mind, she's seeing the rocks being thrown, the table being thrown, the obsessive.
She's also thinking about, like, him beating Tillmeister up.
Yeah,
and,
like, I think that. And so when he starts talking about how excited he is, "Oh, yeah, I can come back and be with Julie again." That's when Susan's like, "You know, actually, I think you should go look for your dad first."
Yeah.
"I'll give you the money to do it."
That's his big argument when they first start talking, when she tells him that his dad's alive, is he's like, "Well, I can't go back. I got to find my dad."
And she's like, "I'll give you money. I think you were right. Your instincts are right." You know, obviously pushing Zach away from the situation. And I don't anticipate she'll tell Mike about it. I think I think I wish she would have told Mike so that maybe he had the chance to go to Utah with Zach.
Because,
like, I'm sure that Mike would go with him if Zach was like, "Take me there and help me find my dad." But I also, the thing that I didn't anticipate feeling is I think I actually understand and agree with Susan's trepidation about Zach coming back.
Yeah.
Because he is so hyper-focused on Julie And she's scared of him being with Julie. Like, I think she's scared that he will hurt her.
Yeah.
And I think that that's valid. I think that looking out for your kid is valid.
Yeah.
And this time, like, I think that this is a situation of her just choosing her daughter over her boyfriend. Yes. So even though I don't love it for Muzin, I understood it as her being a mother.
How old is Zach?
I got the impression that he's 16. Because I think Julie's like 14 or 15.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's like, I understand, like, obviously, like, Susan should choose Julie.
Yeah.
You know, over Mike. Like, this is a situation in which, like, I think she should choose her child.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, I don't think you should just send a 15-16-year-old with some money and just, like, be like, okay, now you can just go roam.
Yeah.
I feel like she really just should have told Mike, because even if Mike did bring him back to the lane, like, you can, like, get a restraining order. Not that, I mean, like, obviously Zach is still there and there is still that fear there, but yeah. Like, you need the child to be with, like, an adult that is going to care for them.
Yeah. And like I said, like, I feel like Mike could have gone with him to look for Paul, and then he could have got his bonding out away from Julie.
We could have had a spinoff.
We could have had a whole spinoff of a Mike and Zach road trip. Yeah, it's like I am so of two minds, because I'm really angry that Susan is lying to Mike, but I also understand she wants to protect her daughter, but I think she's doing it in a bad way.
Yeah.
Susan. It's like a selfish choice disguised as a selfless choice.
Yes.
As if it's for Julie, but it is for both of them at the same time. It's for her as well.
And, like, I feel like she's definitely not going to tell Mike.
Oh, for sure.
Because
I don't think
that's that's the selfish part coming in, where it's like, I want to have it all.
Yeah.
You know, she can't right now.
No, she's had to choose.
If, like, her and Mike are meant to be, they'll be together one day, you know, but, like, it's just like,
I think this is going to backfire on her majorly.
Fucking big time.
Big time. Yeah, I think that is going to backfire for sure.
Lynette wakes up in the middle of the night, takes that umbrella while Mulberry is sleeping, and tosses it in the trash. The next morning, I wrote down a line, but I don't remember who said it in what context. I just have the line written, "He's an orphan with no hands."
Oh, the next morning, Parker's like, the umbrella's gone. And Lynette does this weird monologue where she's like, oh, Mrs. Mulberry went to go live with another kid.
Who was an orphan with no hands.
So that, like, she was trying to make Parker feel like Mrs. Mulberry left to go be with a different child.
Yeah, and Parker seems like kind of bummed, but he's not, like, overtly upset.
Yeah.
Until they go outside.
Because when the trash was being picked up, the umbrella fell out.
Yes, and it's in the middle of the street.
And Parker's Mrs. Mulberry, like, went to go pick it up.
Mrs. Mulberry is right there because Parker's like, Mrs. Mulberry, she's back.
She went to go pick up her umbrella.
And as she was bending over,
oh my God.
Oh my God, a truck comes by and fucking kills her.
I can't believe
That was graphic.
I can't believe the graphic gore they showed.
She exploded.
I can't believe they showed that on ABC.
They wouldn't show Maisie Gibbons' sex toys.
But they'll show
Mrs. Mulberry exploding and, like, ravens coming and eating at her fucking intestines on the street.
I was shocked that Desperate Housewives showed that kind of gore.
Truly, if you're one of the people who just listens to the show and does not watch it,
you've gotta go see.
You gotta go. It's, like, near the end of episode four.
Yeah, so you've gotta go. If you're someone who doesn't watch the show, you've gotta see this Mulberry death scene.
Yeah. I don't know. Why are you laughing?
I'm not. We're even confused in unison. So where are we? Jeez Louise. Parker cries on Lynette.
Yeah.
Because Mulberry just died.
He's traumatized for life.
He had just saw someone explode.
They were all covered in blood.
Liz, do you know that's a character death?
Yeah.
Should we do a mini memoriam for Mrs. Mulberry?
We have to.
Okay. Here lies Mrs. Jeremiah Mulberry.
Here lies Mrs. and berryful.
We hardly knew ye.
But we knew ye so much.
What's your favorite Mrs. Mulberry moment?
My favorite Mrs. Mulberry moment was when she made me breakfast in bed.
Whoa, I didn't realize you two were close.
Yeah. Whoa. Childhood friends.
Wow. Was it hard to watch her die?
It's hard to talk about.
I'm
as
so
well.
Sorry. You can cry if you need to.
I was. You could see like there's some tears coming down my eyes, but you know, I'm trying to keep a strong voice for the podcast because, you know, like, you all can't see me. Yeah. And so I'm keeping it strong, but just know that I am bawling.
You know,
what was your favorite?
I think my favorite part was when she died. Classic in memoriam answer. I think that when she died, it was just pretty graphic and epic.
It was an epic fail.
It was an epic fail. So I think my favorite moment was Mrs. Mulberry died.
Yeah.
And there is our memoriam for Mrs. Mulberry.
Mrs. Mulberry, how we loved her so. Mrs. Mulberry, she's dead now. She traumatized a little baby boy. She is dead. She exploded on the lake. And now we say goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye. That was great. I think Parker crying is the last part of that scene, because then we cut to the swim meet.
We do. We cut to the swim meet. Andrew starts swimming, and when Andrew starts going, George comes in with a gift for Bree, and he's like making sure like Andrew is distracted because Andrew keeps stopping swimming to like look and see what's going on. And earlier, we didn't talk about this, but earlier at dinner, she was like missing a dessert plate. So she didn't have a complete set.
I did not catch that. I was wondering why he gave her a plate.
Oh, yeah, because she was missing a plate.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
You know what I'm thinking?
What are you thinking?
I think that when one of the times he broke into their house, he might have taken it so that he could do something like this.
Oh, shit.
Because she's like, where did you find this?
Do you think it's the same? Oh, my God. He stole it?
I think so, because like he was like, I found it on eBay for like cheap and blah blah blah, like a vintage seller. I think he just stole the plate.
I think you're right. I didn't even think of one. I did not catch that she was missing a plate, and two, I think you're absolutely correct.
The game Desperate Housewives video game, the stealing is inspired by George.
Oh my God, there we go.
No, but yeah, like, and she like hugs him and like
kisses
her, and she's like, don't. But like Andrew gets out of the pool and fucking decks him.
Prince Andrew. Prince, I said, protect Andrew. Your mama, boy.
Truly. Like, thank you, Andrew.
I'm loving Andrew. Yeah, he starts jumping on George. He gets pulled off, and George is bleeding because he punched the shit out of him multiple times. And the coach is holding Andrew back. Bree is confused. It's just chaos. And a bleeding George like gives this gross smile to Andrew.
And Andrew is like, oh shit.
It was a trap.
Yeah.
And he fell right into it.
I want to kill George. I'm sorry. I just got so mad.
I saw your anger. It just hit you. And I wrote down this Mary Alice monologue in depth because I loved it a lot. Because the beginning, they, you know, talked about fathers kind of. And this ending monologue talked about where to find good fathers, and they kind of had a different father for each example. Mm-hmm. First one was, quote, they are the ones missed so terribly that everything falls apart in their absence, and that's about Rex. And that made me really sad, because we see that Andrew is packing his bags, and I guess that Bree is sending him to camp.
Yeah.
And then we see another place to find a good father is the ones who love us long before we even arrive. And we see Carlos rubbing Gabby's pregnant belly. I mean, that's the one thing he wants, is to be a dad. We see Mike walking Bongo, seeing a flyer for Zach, as Mary Alice says that the good fathers are the ones who come looking for us when we can't find our way home.
Yeah.
That made me sad. And then this scene was really good, because she says that the world is filled with good fathers, but the best ones are the ones who make the women in their lives feel like good mothers.
Yeah.
And we get this kind of like longer scene with Tom comforting, yeah, like a weeping Lynette.
Yeah.
I really like Tom and Lynette right now.
So do I.
When he's not being an asshole, I like him.
Yes.
Remember when he did something?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's kind of the that's the end of, yeah, the episode. It's like she's weeping and he comforts her. Mm-hmm.
No apple whites.
No apple whites this whole episode.
They had to make room for Mrs. Mulberry.
They had to make room for in the main billing for Mrs. Mulberry. Sorry, I'm just baffled by the fact that they are the mystery of the season and they were not in this episode once.
Yeah.
That's very funny. You know what else is funny?
What?
That if you want to find us on social media.
Whoa!
Yeah, we've been Wisteria Gaze. You can find us on Twitter at Wisteria Gaze or on Instagram at Wisteria Gaze _, as well as our website, WisteriaGaze.com.
Oh my God, and on that website, we have merchandise. We have some beautiful merch.
We're gonna add some more soon as well.
Yeah, we're gonna add the one shirt that's like the crayon. I can't remember what was on it.
Milky spitty uppy.
We will have those shirts for the public. Nobody's asking for them,
and
so
we're delivering.
Yeah,
I feel like I should quickly whip up a Parker Nation pin.
Yes.
Let us know what other merch you want. We'll figure stuff out.
Like,
why not?
We can do whatever.
It's fun. But eventually, I feel like it's got to be on our list. We need an Edie Britt Defense Squad shirt.
Yes, and like and a Julie Stan first
Human Second human shirt. Second. So, and a horny rage fuel pan.
Yeah.
Ugh, we got to get it all. So we have some merch up there already, but stay tuned. We're gonna get some more soon.
Yeah, and if you want to follow us as a show anywhere else, you can check out our Patreon.
Yes,
our Patreon is great. It helps support the show just a little bit. We have a couple different tiers, the lowest being like $2, the highest being $10.
Yeah. And you get access to, everybody gets access to ad-free episodes and fun extra stuff like our show notes, as well as video postcards. Our first video postcard, I will, not to toot our own horn,
it's very good.
It's very good.
I had a lot of fun making it.
We did a Scream spoof, if you like the movie Scream. I am very proud of it.
So
I think Liz killed it.
I think you killed it as well.
And if you join at the $10 tier, you can access like the archive that will one day exist of our video postcards, but you can see that Scream one right now.
Yeah, hell yeah. And you also get fun stuff like a shout out at the end of the episode, which we're gonna do
right now.
We'd like to shout out Lisa,
Annie,
and Tom.
You three, you keep me young.
You keep us both young.
We love you.
We love you so much. And guess what, Mackenzie?
What?
I think our relationship has been repaired.
Thank God. Is it because the patrons brought us back together?
Yeah. Oh. That's the only reason.
See, your support keeps our relationship together.
I was seething this whole episode, but now I'm all right.
Now you're over it. The patrons are what keep our relationship going.
I'm
going
to take another Zyrtec. This one, it will make me drowsy.
Ooh, okay.
I'm getting loose tonight. But other than that, if you want to find us personally on social medias, you can find me, Liz, anywhere. At the Pigeon Wizard.
And you can find me also anywhere at Mackenzie Wilkes.
Mackenzie.
Liz.
I love reviews.
You love reviews?
Yeah, I feel like I say that not enough. I love reviews so much. They make not only my day, but I assume yours as well.
Yes, I love them.
Reviews also help people find the show.
Yeah.
They're great. And usually at the end of every episode, we pose a question just to get those juices flowing.
Get
you never
juices.
Have to answer them. They're just a suggestion, you know?
Yes.
And last week it was...
Oh my God, I always forget. It was a simple one.
So last week's question was, we don't remember.
Who fucking knows?
We've been trying to rack our brain and we didn't want to look it up. And
so
you know,
whatever.
We get a break once in a while.
We get a little breaky.
So this week's going to be, what was your favorite Mrs. Mulberry moment?
Because we talked about ours in the memoriam.
Yeah.
So share yours with us. Mm-hmm. Your favorite Mrs. Mulberry moment.
And leave a review.
Leave a review.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
It's weird not having to say, answer the question.
I feel free.
Yeah. We never do questions again. Mackenzie, I think there's only a couple things left to say.
What is it? Please tell me.
The first being, I love you. Oh. Again.
What? I love you.
Everyone else, stay juicy.
Just please stay freaking juicy, dude.
Dude, stay juicy.
I'll freaking stay juicy.